Today's episode of Dog Nation Daily is brought to you by Harris Cherokee Resort. Find us online at caesars.com/harris-cherokee.
Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
If you listen to media and fans when it comes to sports, there's a certain timeline that things are supposed to kind of operate on. You know, teams have their day in the sun, players have their day in the sun, but at a certain point in time, a lot of the folks who spend a lot of their time devoted to sports, they just sort of get tired of things after a while, bored with things after a while, and they become really ready for something different. You see this in the NFL, for instance, and I guess this year it kind of did come true, but with the end of the Patriots dynasty, you know, every time the Patriots have any kind of negativity, adversity, anything like that, there's no shortage of opinions out there of, well, this is it. This is the end of the New England dynasty. This is the end of Tom Brady. This is the end of Bill Belichick. And what's kind of funny is people have been saying that for like years and years and years and years. You see a version of that in college football with Nick Saban in Alabama. You probably saw some of that in the NBA with the Golden State Warriors. And you can pick your own example of this. There is a lot of that out there. I think we also see a version of that around Georgia football here too, because in kind of a smaller scale, on a small level, smaller universe, if you will, Georgia has had quite a stranglehold on the SEC East as of late. Won the division 3 years in a row, won every game but one over the course of those last 3 years against SEC East competition. Most of those have been dominant, easy victories, including rivals like the Florida Gators. But if you're a media person, you got to have a story to sell, right? You got to have a podcast to push. You've got to have, you know, something to get attention. If you're a fan, even if you're not a Georgia fan, or let's say in this case, the chief competition, the Florida Gators, you just sort of get tired of the status quo. You get a little restless. You get kind of eager to see something different happen. And we've been kind of battling this the last couple of years, but it's really, I think, reached a fever pitch this offseason as we head towards the 2020 campaign. This idea, it's finally going to happen. Kirby Smart and the Georgia Bulldogs are going to be knocked off the top of the perch in the SEC East. You had the 24/7 sports guy said that not too long ago. You had professional troll, Danny Cannell, who came out and said, you could book it. You know, Florida is going to win the SEC East, mark it down right now. I guess add to that list Joel Klatt, Fox Sports analyst, who was on TV. And this just, came to my attention this week. Apparently this was maybe said around the time of the national championship game, but he had his own version of the way too early top 25. Now, you should know, this is kind of inside baseball. Fox Sports doesn't write anything, so this is on video. Their own version of their kind of way too early in Klatt's case top 10. Georgia not in Joel Klatt's preseason top 10. Florida was, and they were fourth, which I think is laughable. You probably do too, if I'm guessing. But let's be fair and balanced here for a moment. Let's let Joel Klatt, the Fox Sports analyst, make his case for why he thinks the Gators are the number four team in America to start the 2020 season, and Georgia, at least in terms of his top 10, nowhere to be found. Here is Joel Klatt.
Florida. I love Florida next year. I really do. I think Florida is going to be my favorite in the East. This is a team that has a good quality quarterback that's getting better. When you look at what they were this year, they were probably one of the teams that played LSU as good as anybody, along with Auburn. They're good defensively. Trask, their quarterback, he's back. I think Florida could take a little bit of a jump next year.
Big jump for Florida. He says little bit of a jump. Top four ahead of UGA would be a pretty mighty jump, because ultimately it's not the ranking that matters as much here. It's actually being better than Georgia, something that Florida has not been able to do in 2 years under Dan Mullen, obviously nowhere close to that in the final year of Jim McElwain in 2017. Now listen, as I said before, I'm going to try to be fair and balanced here as much as I possibly can. I got Eddie, the ultimate Gator hater mascot, on my desk, so maybe ultimate objectivity is something we can't really aspire to, but at least to the attempt to be fair and balanced as much as possible. And I mean, there has definitely been a vulnerability with the Georgia program. This Georgia offense has not been great, and Dan Mullen's kind of an offensive-minded guy. He did get something out of Kyle Trask this year, more so than I probably thought would have been capable for a quarterback that couldn't even start for his high school team. So from that standpoint, I mean, there has been a vulnerability at Georgia, and just given the fact that Mullen's kind of an offensive guy, you would think, well, he could take advantage of that vulnerability and kind of design an offense that's more fun to watch, better able to perform than what Georgia has to the table. But I believe the time for taking advantage of that vulnerability for Georgia may have been last year. And I honestly think that Florida's kind of missed its window on that. I think that when you kind of look ahead to the idea of what the future might hold, I think you see a situation with Georgia sort of addressing its vulnerability of bringing in a Todd Monken as offensive coordinator, bringing in Buster Faulkner in some sort of capacity. Yes, Jake Fromm left maybe a little sooner than I thought he would, but Georgia answered that issue really quick by bringing in Jamie Newman, the transfer quarterback. And I'm not going to tell you right now that Jamie Newman is capable of winning the Heisman Trophy next season, that he's going to do those kinds of things, be Georgia's version of Joe Burrow. But I'll tell you this right now, he certainly looks like a pretty capable starter, and given the talent that Georgia already kind of has on that side of the ball, you put a capable starter in there, there is a really good chance that the things work out really well. And this notion of, well, 2019 is kind of finally the year where Florida kind of pushes Georgia aside in the SEC East and takes its perch, and what Gators fans would think as their rightful perch, atop that division. I think that may be wishful thinking on the part of the Florida fans, and I think it may be kind of an over-aggressive attempt to stir the pot for media types like Joel Klatt. In fact, when it comes to all this wishful thinking and bold proclamations about, you know, what may happen in the SEC East and Georgia's time in the sun kind of being done, I actually had a chance to reach out to Kirby Smart on that and said, hey, Kirby, you know, if you could speak to our audience about the feeling that Georgia's done, that Georgia's going away, that Georgia's about to disappear, and cede the stage to the Florida Gators. Kirby, if you could speak to everybody about that, what would you say? And at least in my imagination, I believe this is what Kirby would say.
You know what? I'm not leaving. I'm not leaving.
I'm not leaving. The show goes on. This is my home.
Obviously, it's not really Kirby Smart. That's Leo DiCaprio. We had to work pretty hard to edit the HBTFD language out of that. But nonetheless, you get the point here. We don't think Kirby Smart's leaving either. We don't think the Georgia Bulldogs are leaving. We don't think that they are walking away from what is rightfully theirs at the top of the SEC East. And all the aggressive stuff, both in terms of coaching hirings and quarterback transfers and everything else, we think is a perfect example of that, that Florida's best chance to win the East was actually in 2019, and they missed their opportunity. And Leonardo DiCaprio couldn't have said it any better himself than what he just said right there. In fact, this past weekend, we think, is the ultimate proof of all of this, of just how much of a real gap exists between Georgia and Florida, and if anything, how much that gap looks to grow in the years to come. Let me give you two quick examples. Dan Mullen spent his weekend pretty busy, but busy sightseeing. He was a part of Tim Tebow's wedding in South Africa. The reason why we know, because it was all over Twitter. Here he is posing and cheesing with Tebow. Photographs that look really good on Instagram and things like that. They've got their faces painted there as a part of, I guess, one of the rituals and customs associated with the South African wedding, I guess. But the whole point here is, Dan Mullen's on safari, you know, on vacation, essentially, on one of the crucial weekends to start the 2021, or I should say the 2020 calendar year, ahead of the 2020 Ultimate Signing Day and the start of the 2021 cycle. So meanwhile, while Dan Mullen's posing with Tebow and looking at giraffes through a pair of binoculars, you know what Kirby Smart's doing? He's hosting five-star quarterbacks like Brock Vandegrift, laying the foundation for what ultimately became a commitment to Vandegrift for the 2021 class. That's how Kirby Smart spends his weekends. Dan Mullen spends his weekends on a sightseeing tour for a Tim Tebow's wedding. So for all the people who think, oh, man, Florida's about to get its opportunity. Oh, man, Florida is about to sort of jump up and take the perch that Georgia's owned for the last 3 years. I don't think Kirby Smart's going anywhere. In fact, the hire of Todd Monken, the bringing in some capacity of Buster Faulkner, the arrival of Jamie Newman, following that up with still a very talented Dwan Mathis and a very talented Carson Beck, and obviously Brock Vandegrift for the class of 2021. If anything, Georgia has looked at the one vulnerability that it had, taken great steps to fix that, and Florida's best chance, well, that time may have already passed. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented today by Harrah's Cherokee Casino Resort. Good to have you with us, no matter how you get here, live on video, 10 a.m., Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, radio at noon on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref, or as a podcast, wherever you find them, including the world-famous DogNation.com. Just really glad to have you with us today, and really appreciate our friends at Harrah's Cherokee Casino Resort making it all possible. You know, they've got two great locations, both less than a three-hour drive from Atlanta, which makes it really convenient. Both unbelievable gaming facilities, all the great casino games that you've come to love, they've got them all there for you. Also, world-class accommodations for you as well. Let me give you a for instance. Whether it be Harrah's Cherokee Valley River or Harrah's Cherokee Casino Resort, they are going to take good care of you. In fact, at Harrah's Cherokee Casino Resort, they've got 10 dining locations, 1,100 rooms, spa. This is just a world-class getaway. And coming soon at both Harrah's Cherokee Casino Resort and Harrah's Cherokee Valley River, sports gaming is on the way. The book is going to open up really soon. You get a chance to experience sports betting right there at the Harrah's Cherokee Casino Resort properties. If you're watching on video, you see a website on your screen to go to. Or if you're listening to radio podcast, the best thing I can tell you to do is search Harrah's Cherokee Casino Resort, the book, sports book. That'll get you exactly where you need to go. All right, we've got Mike Griffith here coming up in just a moment. Before we do that, let me go around the doghouse here today, and I'm going to mention something, and this is in no way intended to be a jab at Jake Fromm whatsoever, but I do think there is something we can say about Fromm, or at least highlight something that draft analysts are saying about Fromm at the moment. And I think it is instructive for how Georgia needs to handle its quarterback position going forward. There is a website called the Draft Network, and they recently published what I thought was a really detailed look at Jake Fromm. Now, to be fair to Fromm here, there is a lot that the folks like the Draft Network really like about his game. And there's a lot of reasons to think that Jake Fromm has a chance to have a really impressive NFL career. But there's always like a list of pros and cons, positive and negatives for every player. And there was one thing in particular about the negative on Fromm that was written up that I thought might be relevant for Georgia here in 2020. I don't know who the writer is on this. It was just sort of a, you know, I guess a generic collection of writers. But here's one of the Draft Network analysts saying this, and I thought this was interesting. While I mostly like Fromm's upper body throwing mechanics, he is guilty of some flat-footed throws and failure to generate throwing power from the waist down. His trail foot often lags, and there is no rotation. Now listen to this sentence. I think this is interesting. The disappointing aspect of that note is that Fromm doesn't generate enough zip on some throws, while there is an easily identifiable way to get more zip on passes. In other words, everybody knows that Fromm doesn't have the world's strongest arm. There is some aspect of Fromm's throwing mechanics, at least in 2019, I'm assuming, where this analyst says it could have been better if Fromm had just used his footwork a little bit differently. Had he just done some things a little bit different, Fromm could have been better throwing the football. Now, we all know that Jake Fromm did plenty great, and there's going to be plenty of reasons why NFL teams like him. But let's focus in on this analysis for the moment, and let's just sort of assume this is true. If that indeed is the case, that Fromm's own footwork, Fromm's own throwing mechanics inhibited his ability to throw the ball as well as he could, then isn't that an example of a fixable problem? Isn't that an example of an aspect where coaching would have mattered? And it's not my intent here to also drag James Coley's name through the mud or anything like that, but there's an obvious reason why Georgia's looking to bring in Todd Monken, whether Coley remains on the staff or not. There's an obvious reason why Georgia sees incredible value in a guy like Buster Faulkner, who has been himself a quarterback and worked with a lot of quarterbacks. I think that we see, with the explosion of offense, with certain power programs around college football, a degree to which coaching truly does matter, that you can coach better mechanics out of your quarterbacks if you are dedicated to that during practice, and you can get better results for your offense overall if that's the kind of thing that you are fully equipped to be able to do. And this past year, the regression of Jake Fromm, I think, goes a long way towards showing that Georgia just wasn't quite capable of doing that. If it was, it would have done so at some point in time during the season. So, listen, the Fromm career was what it was, but this particular aspect of what's being said about him now is an example of how maybe Fromm could have gotten better coaching during his final season at UGA, and certainly hopeful with the start of Todd Monken and the start of Buster Faulkner's relationship at Georgia in some form or fashion, that future Georgia quarterbacks are just sort of coached better in that regard. In fact, if you want to go back to this past season with the Cleveland Browns, obviously Baker Mayfield, the quarterback that Monken was working with there, not exactly a great collection of results, but you can decide for yourself how much of a role Monken may or may not have played in that. But one thing is for sure, Twitter in press conferences in Cleveland when he was sort of asked to talk about Mayfield. We did see a little bit of a glimpse into what Monken's philosophy is going to be with working with other quarterbacks. In fact, here is Todd Monken from during the season with the Cleveland Browns kind of talking about what, you know, what it's like to work with a quarterback and what his philosophy around all of that is. Here's Todd Monken.
You know, you're going to get tired of me every week saying it, but we have to, you know, it starts with scheming it better, practice it better, and execute it better. I mean, there's really, that's how you do it, because everybody has a hand in that, really, really does, from how we scheme it, how we execute it, how we get the guys to practice it, and then once we get down there, guys making plays.
So scheming it, practicing it, and executing it. That's something I think that Georgia could have done better with its offense here this season. And as you look ahead to what we think is going to be a year for Jamie Newman in 2020, and then maybe, you know, Brock Vandegrift or someone else in 2021, how that gets coached up and taught up at Georgia, I think will be a very interesting thing to be able to see. Before we talk to Mike Griffith, let me give you a quick word from our friends at Kroger. First of all, make sure you tune in this afternoon at 3 p.m. for Before the Hedges, presented by Kroger, as myself and Jeff Sintel talk about all the latest UGA recruiting news. And you better believe there is a lot of that, including the aftermath of Vandegrift's decision yesterday. Also, let me remind you that our friends at Kroger have got you covered for family night. You know, it's cold right now, so a lot of you are staying indoors maybe a little more often than you would have during the warm weather season. Well, Kroger's got you covered on all that. Whether it be, you know, classic games like Sorry or Jenga, now 25% off. Great children's books, also 25% off. And when you buy select movies like Lorax and Maleficent, you also get a free bag of Twizzlers, 3-count Pop Secret to enjoy while you watch the movies at home. So it's cold. Stay indoors. Enjoy a family night courtesy of our friends at Kroger. Check out the Kroger closest to you for a whole lot more on that. Speaking of recruiting, we will react to some good news for Georgia signee Jalen Carter. A very interesting tweet, I thought. Pretty provocative statement from another UGA signee, Keely Ringo. We'll get to all that a little bit later on. But as we said before, it is busy around Georgia. The Dogs have done some big things as of late. Let's talk more about that with our buddy Mike Griffith right now.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
All right, I'll bring in Mike Griffith, who's been writing a bunch as of late about the addition of Todd Monken as Georgia offensive coordinator and some role and some capacity for Buster Faulkner. And, Mike, I guess I'll let you come in on a topic that I was just discussing. I think it remains to be seen if UGA crosses that final threshold of winning a national championship or even getting back the college football playoff. I think that's a very difficult thing to do. On paper, teams like Ohio State and Clemson look really good. I'm not quite so comfortable yet telling you or anybody else yet how I feel about how Georgia matches up with the nation's best for 2020, but my confidence in Georgia as the top team in the SEC East is just as strong and just as high as it ever was. I think that Georgia was vulnerable. I think that Florida could have potentially taken advantage of that, but the way in which that Georgia has answered that vulnerability with coaching hires and quarterback acquisitions and just a continued string of good recruitment, I think that puts Florida's chance at taking advantage of Georgia. Frankly, I think it puts that at great risk. How do you, I guess to start with, think the recent moves at UGA have impacted the Dogs' quest to stay on top of the SEC East?
Yeah, well, you know, just to put things into perspective, BA, I was going back looking at some stories in November, and Clemson didn't have any wins over top 25 teams at that stage with a couple weeks left. Now, mind you, Georgia was 5-1 against the top 25. So right out of the gate, when we start comparing Georgia to the Ohio States and the Clemsons, there's far less margin for error when you play in the SEC. And I know that other conferences don't like to pretend that they can point to one game in the playoff as evidence that their conference is as good, but that's simply not the case. If you're playing five or six top 25 teams versus one, obviously it's a lot more demanding. There's less margin for error, and it also takes a toll on your players and on your depth far more than playing a schedule that doesn't include top 25 teams. So I would start there, and carrying that over into next season in the SEC East. As we look around, you know, we say Florida's the greatest threat simply because I don't see anybody else. I mean, unless you're bought in on Tennessee's momentum, which, as far as I'm concerned, they still have the same quarterback, and I don't believe they have championship-level play at quarterback. I know Cade Mays will provide a boost to their offensive line, but a lot of guys would.
Yes.
They did lose their best receivers, so that kind of takes Tennessee out of the mix to me, because I thought that was what made them very dangerous, was Marquez Callaway, Juwan Jennings. Florida's the team, though, And I saw Georgia last year hold Florida without a touchdown, I think the first three quarters, if I'm not mistaken. And Georgia brings basically everybody back on defense and will only be better. And that was the nation's best scoring defense, best rushing defense, number three total defense, and number eight pass efficiency defense. And they returned 9 of 11 starters.
Yeah, no, I think that's exactly right. And beyond that, I know you've had a chance to sort of weigh in on this a number of platforms, but just to kind of get us started over here, I guess just give me your overall thoughts on the addition of Todd Monken to this UGA staff and kind of how all this is going to impact what Georgia does moving forward.
Well, because of that defense, and this is what you got to understand, or not you do understand, but what some people don't understand is that when you've got a defense like that, you don't have to throw it 50 times a game just to score 70-0 wins. You're far better off scoring a 31-0 win than a 50-0 win if you're playing 60 snaps versus 100 snaps. Because the more snaps you play, BA, the more guys get hurt and the more wear and tear on your team. So just because you bring in an air raid expert, just because you bring in a coordinator who had the most prolific passing game in the NFL 2 years ago, doesn't mean that Kirby's suddenly going to flip his lid and throw the ball 50 times a game. It would be lunacy to do that. Why expose your quarterback to hits? Why run that many plays? So much of this, as we just talked about, was margin for error. And if you can win a game playing 70 plays as opposed to 100 plays, then you do that because that's less wear and tear. So I don't think George is necessarily going to change their profile with a complete makeover. But there are different ways to do things, and there are different ways to scheme people open. I know that's something you and I talked about. We sit next to one another in the press, but we said that. You said it many times.
Yeah.
When is somebody just going to come running open? When is the scheme going to free someone? And I thought that was a very astute observation, and I think that's what these changes are intended to do, is find ways to do things better. Not necessarily completely change the philosophy, but modify things so that what you do better and you're more successful doing it.
So I think it's really interesting. I think this is going to be changing a lot more than you seem to think it's going to change. Now, I'll say as a fan of this team, I don't want Georgia to become what I think of as Oklahoma State having been or what Texas Tech has been. I don't want Georgia to go, you know, get baptized fully into the Big 12 waters. That's not what I'm looking for. But in terms of what I think that Georgia needs and what I'm assuming that Kirby Smart observes that Georgia needs, I do think there's a pretty significant change coming. Now, does that mean that it's going to be, you know, a heavy imbalance now in favor of pass compared to run? I don't know about that. I think that Monken actually ran the ball plenty, you know, if you want to go back to his time at Oklahoma State. But I'll take the LSU game this past year as a perfect example of this. There are some offenses that are so explosive that I don't care how good and stingy your defense has been all season long, you're just going to have limited success stopping those kinds of teams. LSU is an example of that this year. A lot of the teams that you would play in the college football playoff, I believe, are also potentially examples of that as well. The only choice you have is to be able to match their ability to be explosive. And what we saw from Georgia this year is when facing a team like that and kind of flipping the switch and suddenly trying to play a lot more, you know, of a pass-happy style, which it did against LSU, if you haven't been doing that all year long, you can't just flip a switch and do that one game when you really need to. That's got to be a philosophy ingrained into your program. I think that's what Georgia needs if it wants to go toe-to-toe with what LSU was this season. So, Mike, I would say that based on my understanding of Monken and what I believe that Faulkner brings to the table, I'm guessing there's going to be a lot more changes coming to Georgia than you seem to think.
Yeah, I'm speaking specifically about next season, BA. You know, the thing that I keep in mind with Kirby Smart is that every game is its own entity with Kirby. Kirby's not a guy that says, this is who we are every game. Kirby has a chameleon offense. And that's why when we would look at Jake Fromm's stats, we'd go, oh my goodness, look at how well he plays in Mercedes-Benz Stadium. Well, look at who he was playing and look at what the offense needed to do. Kirby's not a guy that's going to throw the ball just for the sake of throwing the ball. I don't think that's going to change. I really don't. I think he's going to want balance, and balance in his mind is being able to run or pass the ball effectively depending on what the matchup gives you. Now, against LSU, to your point, Georgia recognized that it needed a far more aggressive game plan, and they threw the ball more often on first down, and unfortunately they dropped a touchdown pass on the first play of the game. Dave Aranda spoke about that. He said, you know, they really shook me with that bunch formation. They did some things that we hadn't seen before, And we were slow to adjust, and I bet their fans are upset they dropped that pass. Well, they sure were, because that would have been a 7-0 lead. And to your point, that's what you have to do to have a chance against these dynamic offenses. The other thing that happened to Georgia, and as much as it can be rectified with coaching changes, it needs to have players. Georgia lacked explosivity in the offense. Now, they still had DeAndre Swift, but the downfield blocking was horrible compared with last year when they were very effective at that with Riley Ridley and Jason Stanley. And everybody rolls their eyes when Kirby Smart talks about receivers blocking and downfield blocking and things like that, but that's the difference between a 25-yard run by DeAndre Swift and a 78-yard run. Georgia was lacking in their receiving core in several different areas, and downfield blocking was one of them. Explosive plays was the other. It wasn't that Jake Fromm suddenly forgot how to throw a deep ball. It was that they didn't have many guys that could run past you. And the ones that could were attested for by defenses. I think the addition of these receivers, the addition of explosive players at tight end, will help Georgia open things up as much as anything else, as much as any scheme. And the key to LSU wasn't just Joe Brady. It was the receivers. It was Joe Burrow being able to dodge two defenders and have 9 seconds to throw the ball 60 yards downfield. Can Georgia find a quarterback that can make plays off the run and receivers that can go up in the end zone and win those 50-50 balls? Because last year, they didn't have that.
Let me do one more back and forth on this, and then I want to talk about something else. You know, I'm a big believer, while I love physicality and I love running the football both at the NFL level and the college level, I think the modern game has changed in this way, Mike. I think now the pass sets up the run more so than the run sets up the pass. We saw Kyle Shanahan, for instance, in the NFC Championship game on Sunday running all over the Green Bay Packers, but it's the necessity to defend the entire field, I believe, that opens up those running lanes. I think the same thing's true for Georgia here as well. For as physical as Georgia was, obviously ingrained from a philosophical standpoint in, you know, desire to run the football, the lack of concern about Georgia throwing the ball, the lack of credentials when it came to doing that, I just think essentially took away the entirety of the Georgia offense. So here's the, I guess, the bottom line for me about how I think that Monken is going to be different for Georgia, and I think it's a good and positive change. UG, I believe, will still run the ball plenty, but I believe those will be running plays set up by an effective pass game, because suddenly defenses, to use a line that Joe Brady has used, which I love, is now going to have to defend every blade of grass on the field. That, to me, opens up running lanes, and that's how the modern game works. And certainly as a fan who wants the best for Georgia, that's the evolution that I would prefer Georgia to take.
Yeah, I would agree with you. You know, and until you have players that can scare those defenses into playing too deep and backing off the line of scrimmage, they're going to keep lining up the same way, regardless of your scheme. I thought Kirby Smart made a great point after the SEC title game when he said, you know, we ran a lot of the same plays that LSU did. The difference was our guys didn't get open. So it starts with personnel, regardless of the scheme. I'll say this. You could have given Todd Monken the same offensive, the same players that Georgia had in that receiving core this year, and I don't think you would have seen much of a difference, quite frankly, because you had the same guys out there dropping passes and not getting open. Because that's only part of the equation to have the scheme. The other part is you have to catch the ball, as we saw in the first play of the game against LSU when the ball was dropped, or in overtime against South Carolina when the ball went off of a receiver's hands that could have set up a game-winning field goal and was instead intercepted. So once you have players that can catch the football and get open, I think Georgia can do a lot of great things. And I think the biggest thing, going back to Kirby's philosophy, is what does the defense give you, right? What we saw, unfortunately, last year was the passing game was so pathetic and the receivers were so poor that Georgia chose to run into an eight-man box rather than exploit that man-to-man coverage on the outside, because those receivers couldn't get open and couldn't catch the football. So they were still running into an eight-man box. To your point, with Todd Monken and with receivers that can get open and catch the football, suddenly you see those man-to-man matchups, you exploit them, and defenses have to change. And now you get the six-man box that you can run into that LSU was able to exploit because they had the scheme and the receivers to beat that tight mess, tight press man coverage.
Let me do something else in the time we have remaining. What do you make of the addition of Buster Faulkner in a sort of analyst capacity, at least officially according to UGA, but given his resume, it seems like he could potentially be in line for a lot more than that. What do you make of Faulkner now working at Georgia after what I, at least the best that I can tell anyway, just from kind of reading some biographical data, a pretty distinguished career as an offensive coordinator at the Group of Five level?
Yeah, it makes you wonder why he got fired at Arkansas State when you look at what they accomplished there. But to your point, I think it is just quote-unquote an official capacity for now. I think we all know, and you're transparent with your audience, and I try to be as well. I think we all know the clock's ticking on another staff change. You know, we're all monitoring to see who's changing their Twitter profiles and what other job openings could be available, whether it's Cortez Hankton or whether it's James Coley. It certainly seems like somebody's on the way out. Now, in the case of Coley, here's a guy who makes over $900,000. He's an assistant head coach. And could he be assigned the receivers and assistant head coach title and justify that pay? Well, he could. Or does James Coley want to maintain an offensive coordinator title or the quarterback's coach title and go somewhere else? And the question is, can he make $900,000 plus somewhere else? And how much of a pay cut would he be willing to take to go somewhere else? And is it his choice? Is it a deal where James Coley has to find something else? Or he gets bumped down to receivers coach and Cortez Hankton gets fired? I mean, I don't know. These are things that we can only speculate on, and would anyone would logically speculate on. Because to your point, Faulkner has great credentials, and why would he leave an offensive coordinator job at Southern Miss merely to become an analyst? Now, maybe he wants to be ready and waiting for the next staff change. Georgia's a very attractive place to be. It is a championship-caliber program. Year in and year out, 41 of the last 43 games Georgia's played, they've had the potential to win a national championship at the end of the day. So I suppose it's possible. I would wonder what his salary would look like. We do have FOIA requests in to find out how much money he's going to make in that position. But to your point, it certainly seems to me that the other shoe is yet to drop, and maybe we'll wait until after signing day. Maybe that's when it'll happen. I don't know. I know that that Coley and Hankton are both tied to recruits, and I know that there's an argument to keep and get rid of either or both. So we'll just have to wait and see. And who knows, maybe Kirby's got another trick up his sleeve. I do know this, with each passing day, I think that the perception and the complexion of Georgia football looks better. I feel much better about Georgia football than I did on December 7th, and I know Connor and I discussed this yesterday. There's no guarantees these changes will work, but they show you how intent Kirby is, to make sure that Georgia football improves. And the definition of lunacy is expecting better results by doing things the same way.
Let me kind of finish up with this and a note around the basketball. You know, last night at Kentucky, I'll be honest with you, what matters most to me is the long-term health of the Georgia program. From that standpoint, Ant-Man is actually the least interesting part of the UGA team for me, because it's clear that, you know, he's got some things he's working on at the NBA level, but Georgia's a long-term program, I think, is got some different issues it's got to try to address. And, Mike, I'll be honest with you, I can't tell if this team's getting any better or not. They seem to be really good at playing well in second halves when games have already been decided, capable of beating a Memphis team that's also pretty young and, frankly, not all that experienced. I can't tell if this team's getting any better. Obviously, it's nice to beat Tennessee, which it did at home, a couple days ago. But, you know, the nuts and bolts nature of what Kentucky does well, especially Ashton Hagans, is just too much for UGA to overcome right now. I want to evaluate the team itself more so than I want to evaluate Ant-Man. He's got to go to the basket. He's got to be more aggressive. That's what NBA scouts want from him. But that's not going to determine much about Georgia, you know, very much one way or another, because that's still sort of a short-term proposition for him here in Athens. When it comes to the other players that Crean has recruited and brought in to develop, I can't tell if they're getting any better or not.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And, you know, I'll start with one player that I think makes them a lot better who's been injured the last week, and that's Sevier Wheeler, the point guard. You know, he suffered that ankle injury in the second half against Tennessee, and I did ask Tom Crean. He was not 100% at Mississippi State, and he still wasn't 100% last night. He didn't score in 17 minutes. So I think that's a little bit of it, not an excuse, but if they look a little off, I think Sevier is truly the catalyst. As far as Anthony Edwards, this is a dynamic player. He puts you on the map. He brings attention to Georgia basketball. He is fun to watch. But to your point, you know, it's not like he's going to be around 4 years. The big question here is, what is Tom Crean doing and what are his players doing? Let me say this. The program last year, without a doubt, had the least competitive group of seniors that I've ever been around in any sport, in any team, in my 30 years as a beat writer. It was the worst losing culture. Players were indifferent after games. They philosophized about whether or not light, whether or not how trees grew, and whether or not losses really mattered. And their comeback was they were just happy to have a degree from the University of Georgia. It was absolutely pathetic. It was horrible, and I can understand why it angered Georgia fans. I don't know how Tom Crean got through the year with it, because players that senior class, I couldn't have kept those guys on my team. I think getting rid of some of those guys was addition by subtraction. That said, there is some leftover element to that, and you're searching for leadership, right? So you have some players who came in under very poor leadership conditions that don't know how to lead and that don't hate to lose enough. And Crane has identified that. And I'll give him credit, because when you publicly call out a player or you publicly call out a team, that's a gamble. Because those guys can quit on you, B.A. This is a new generation. And some of these kids will quit on you if they're not made of the right stuff. And Crane's called them out. He called them out at Mississippi State. He said they were pitiful. He said that they lacked competitiveness. And he worked them hard. And he said he looked forward to the next test at Kentucky because he couldn't wait to give those kids an opportunity to atone. I'll say this. Rayshon Hammonds played hard last night. He played hard. He rebounded. They out-rebounded Kentucky in the first half. Now, give Calipari credit. There's a reason why they're the best team in the SEC, and there's a reason why they're excellent at Rupp Arena. And Kentucky does what Kentucky does. Georgia only lost by 9. Even with Anthony Edwards, I thought having one of his worst games of the year. He didn't score in the first half. He wasn't assertive. He wasn't aggressive. And he didn't look like he cared enough about winning. Now, Anthony Edwards is only 18 years old, and he's only one player, and I don't think he defines the team. I think he will grow. He will get better. And one other thing to keep in mind, and I know that we've talked more about basketball than you normally would, but one thing to keep in mind is that Georgia opened their SEC season against 5 teams that played in the NCAA tournament. Greg Sankey did not do them any favors with his schedule. Things will get much easier schedule-wise, and I think we'll have a much better picture of where Georgia basketball is headed in the next 4 or 5 weeks.
Mike, good stuff. We'll look forward to reading a bunch more from you at DogNation.com. We appreciate you being here on our program today, Dog Nation Daily, presented by Harris Cherokee Casino Resort. We'll look forward to talking to you soon.
Thanks, B.A.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Good stuff there from Mike Griffith. We'll bring that. Yeah, there we go. Bring that music down a little bit. Yeah, good stuff there from Mike Griffith. One thing, though, I will say about Mike is he is a lot more comfortable. And I hate to relitigate the past because at a certain point in time, you're just going to move on. But he's a lot more comfortable blaming the receivers for Georgia's offensive woes in 2019 than I am. You know, I think the lesson of 2019 is coaching matters. And if you want to compare the Georgia receivers on paper to the LSU receivers, you know, I'm going to do this kind of off the cuff here. You know, maybe I would think differently if I was actually looking at the data in front of me. But has LSU's recruitment of the receiver position really been all that different than what Georgia's has been? I mean, LSU's got the 5-star Terrace Marshall. Jamar Chase was not a 5-star, though, right? Jamar Chase was a 4-star. So, are Chase and Marshall all that much different than Pickens and Blaylock? You've got Kearse Jackson was a 4-star. You've got Demetrius Robertson as a transfer, one-time 5-star, who was a freshman All-American during his time at Cal. I mean, the Georgia receiving position underperformed this season. There's no doubt about that. But it was not a group without credentials. Now, Georgia's also not recruiting receivers at the same pace that, like, say, Alabama has or Ohio State is now. There are programs that recruit receivers better than Georgia does. That's certainly true. But, you know, a lot of the most prolific offenses in college football don't have 5-star receivers across the board. They just have open players across the board. I think that my ultimate takeaway from the 2019 season, and really my theme for Georgia's preparation for 2020, is that coaching matters. Not that recruiting doesn't matter, but coaching matters. It's not 90% recruiting and then we'll get out there and do a few drills and sort of see how it goes during a game. As Todd Monken said in the audio we played before, you know, you've got to scheme guys up. You've got to practice it well and go out there and execute it on the field. And coaches play a big role in that. I'm always a lot more comfortable. If we're going to start playing the blame game for when things don't work, who you give the most blame to, I'm always going to give it to the coaches because they're the ones who are making the millions of dollars to get it done. They've got the extra responsibility. If a player's not succeeding, my first question is not to the player, why aren't you succeeding? My first question is to the coach, why aren't you making him successful? And that's just the way I think it's got to go in college football, given the fact that the people drawing the paychecks are the coaches. They are the ones that I believe have the extra responsibility. But we can obviously talk about that all day long. Let's go around the SEC instead. Cruise around the SEC courtesy of our friends at Royal Caribbean. And I've been telling you about this for a while. You know, there is so much to enjoy on a Royal Caribbean cruise. I want to sort of give you one specific piece of information here. How about the Oasis of the Seas? It's just an example of what makes a Royal Caribbean cruise great. Oasis of the Seas may be a great way to kind of pay close attention to that, whether it be Ultimate Abyss, which is the tallest slide at sea. Just a really, really fun thing for you to do with your family. Playmaker Sports Bar and Arcade. I mean, Dog Nation obviously loves this. A chance to kind of be on a sports bar while at sea. That's a really fun thing to do on the ship. You've got Music Hall, the Lyman Coconut Bionic Bar, which has got like the robotic arm serving your drinks for you. Sort of the entertainment nightclub type stuff. It's all just a really, really fun thing to be a part of. So make sure you check out RoyalCaribbean.com to find out more about this. You can also get in touch with a travel advisor there and be on your way to a terrific, terrific vacation on Oasis of the Seas or really any of the great ships that Royal Caribbean has. So RoyalCaribbean.com for a whole lot more information on that. All right, a few stories here. I think Auburn is a very interesting team. I think that Auburn is typically one of the more interesting programs during the offseason because, to me, it seems like we've kind of replicated this same narrative over the course of the last few years. You know, a team like Florida gets a lot of the hype and a lot of the talk. And yet, when you look at a program like Auburn, if you don't make the side-by-side comparison between the two, I think there's a lot more reason for Georgia fans to continue to kind of keep a look over on the plains, looking west more so than looking south down to Gainesville. I just do. And I think there's a very interesting development this offseason probably worth monitoring. At the same rate in which Georgia is trying to make big changes to its offense, bringing in Todd Monken, letting him be offensive coordinator with what I presume is going to be a little more freedom and control than previous Georgia offensive coordinators have enjoyed, it seems like Auburn may be considering doing some of the same stuff. I think that Chad Morris is a pretty high-profile hire. You think of Morris as a failed coach at Auburn, I should say at Arkansas, I understand why, at SMU as head coach before that, but he was a very good offensive coordinator at Clemson prior to those moves, and despite the fact that he wasn't quite great at managing an SEC program as a head coach, there's certainly no reason to disbelieve that he's still a very capable and competent offensive mind. Gus Malzahn has let it be known that Chad Morris will get to have full control of the Auburn offense next season. He will get to call plays. This has been a weakness for Malzahn, that push and pull, that tug of war with his offensive coordinators. I think it's hurt the Auburn program. But with Bo Nix going into a sophomore season, with Chad Morris getting a chance to have the kind of autonomy that all offensive coordinators crave to do good work with him, you know, you saw some good and some bad from Nix this past season. I don't know that he's a special quarterback, but I do believe, to use the same word again, he's a capable quarterback. And working with Morris, I think, could make them dangerous. Now, Auburn loses a lot off this year's team, and there's a lot of evolution that program's undergoing. But the Morris era as Auburn play caller, I think, should be worth watching. A couple other stories to kind of get to here for a moment. If I'm an Oklahoma fan, I'm a little frustrated about this. You may have seen the picture by now. Jalen Hurts was given a gift. I think we actually even have a photo to show of this from someone on Twitter of Jalen Hurts, the helmet, Senior Bowl, half Oklahoma Sooners on one side, half Alabama Crimson Tide on the other. Yeah, William McFadden from the Atlanta Falcons was there. He shows the video of Hurts getting this helmet. Now, it was initially thought that Hurts would wear this in the Senior Bowl. Instead, this was just kind of a one-time gift. He's actually just wearing his Oklahoma helmet during the game itself or the Senior Bowl practices. But if you're an Oklahoma fan, it's like, how is this guy still half Alabama? You know, he got essentially ran out of the program because they wanted to start Tua Tagovailoa. Every question he ever got in press conference, at least the ones that made its way here to us, were always about, hey, what's it like to do this? You did this at Alabama. You know, it's like he was kind of always treated as an Alabama quarterback. If I'm an Oklahoma fan, I'm thinking, this is the program that didn't want you. How are you still half Alabama? Now, in this case, it's probably the Senior Bowl doing this as kind of a marketing gimmick, which I probably understand. The games play in Mobile, Alabama. But nonetheless, if I'm an Oklahoma fan, maybe I don't feel quite so good about that. Then finally, one more thing as we're cruising on the SEC here for a moment. Daniel Jeremiah, probably one of the more respected names out there, has his first mock draft up at NFL.com. There are a ton of SEC names here and a couple of Georgia names here, too. Burrow, of course, you might expect number one overall to the Bengals. You've got other SEC names, Tua Tagovailoa going fifth to the Miami Dolphins. That's interesting to think about. Derek Brown going seventh to the Panthers, a team that you might have thought would be involved in a quarterback, but he has them taking Derek Brown. You got a lot of Clemson names in here. He does, if you're curious, he does have Andrew Thomas going 10th to the Cleveland Browns to be reunited with Nick Chubb, which I'm sure both those guys would like. Top 10 pick for Thomas. That's certainly nothing you have to apologize for. Clavon Chesson, the pass rusher from LSU, he's got him going 11th to the Jets. What else is interesting here? Alabama's Jerry Jeudy, he has him 15th to the Broncos. If you're interested as well, Xavier Kinney, McKinney, the defense back from Alabama, 17th to the Cowboys. He does have DeAndre Swift. The Dolphins have a second first-round pick. Daniel Jeremiah's got Swift going to the Dolphins at 18. Now, Falcons need a running back. Some of you don't live in Atlanta. You don't care about this. But for a lot of Georgia fans who live in the Atlanta area, there's always that thought of, well, the Falcons have a chance to draft a UGA player. Daniel Jeremiah at 16 overall has got the Falcons taking A.J. Epinesa, the pass rusher from Iowa, and then Swift going at 18. My guess is Falcons probably go pass rush there if they can, but they need a running back. Swift going 18 overall. Could that be worth watching? We'll have to wait and see. And for now, we'll make that cruise around the SEC, courtesy of Royal Caribbean. And in the time that we have left here today on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Harris Cherokee Casino Resort, I want to mention a couple of recruiting nuggets. First of all, make sure you check out Jeff Centella at DogNation.com for more on the Jalen Carter story. Carter, a UGA signee, and he got a big bump this week. He is now a five-star composite, and here's what Jeff Centella wrote a little bit about that at DogNation.com. Carter is now five-star, which means the Bulldogs now have a quintet, fancy word from Jeff, five five-star recruits in the 2020 class. That total only trails Clemson, who has six in that category. You can read more from Jeff on Jalen Carter, but it's kind of already been assumed that all the freshmen incoming for Georgia for 2020 that have a chance to make an immediate impact, Carter's kind of already been one of the higher names on that list. In fact, I think he may draw a little bit of Trayvon Walker comparisons. Now, Walker's a pretty special freshman in 2019. I think that Trayvon's got an incredibly bright future, as one day one of these guys will be reading about on some first-round mocks at NFL.com. So it's almost unfair to make too much of a comparison to Trayvon Walker with Jalen Carter, but given what people saw from Carter, including Jeff himself at the Under Armour All-American game, there seems to be a lot to like about Jalen Carter. Now the rating services have kind of followed suit on that. Five-star status for Jalen Carter. That's good news for UGA fans who just like to see as many five stars in the program as possible, but also nice to see Carter rewarded for what I think was a terrific senior season. One more recruiting note, and this is just more funny or interesting than important, but there was some chatter about Georgia and kind of where its recruiting ranking was, and a five-star UGA signee at cornerback, Keely Ringo, kind of weighed in on that. So one of the Rivals guys was saying that Clemson's hanging on to that number one spot for now. Ringo said, he says, watch this, then he laughs. If Zach Evans had have stayed, we would have been number one easily. It's coming, though. Now, I'm assuming when he says it's coming, I think he means the number one ranking, maybe more so than Zachary Evans, but I guess when it comes to recruiting, you never say never. So obviously for any, remaining piece of the 2020 class, we'll keep following up on all of that. As I told you before, you can check out Before the Hedges presented by Kroger this afternoon at 3 p.m. for a lot more UGA recruiting news, including whatever may happen next. With those guys still on the board for 2020 and the early momentum for 2021, now the five-star quarterback Brock Vandegrift is in the fold. Good stuff on yesterday's show, by the way, too, with Jeff Sintel on that. Make sure you check out yesterday's edition of our program if you missed that. To really quickly kind of wrap up here, what I was also mentioning with Mike Griffith a moment ago, the basketball team, I just don't quite know what to make of what they're doing right now. As Mike said, when Xavier Wheeler is healthy, he feels like the kind of piece that you can build around for the future. Ant-Man right now, does he need to be more assertive? Probably so, but my bigger concern was the Georgia program overall. Is it getting better? Honestly, I can't tell. One thing I can tell you, though, is it's been a long time since the lousy, stinking Gators beat the Georgia Bulldogs. 1,180 days, in fact. That's our Gator Hater Updater. We'll see you tomorrow. And on video, time now for our R.S. Andrews Cool Down. You know, our buddy Dari and the whole team over there, they'll take good care of you. Cold last night. And if you're thinking about your house feeling a little too cold on the inside, if the inside's coming into the, if the outside's kind of creeping into the inside when it comes to some of that air,